as you continue on in your staff training manual, pages 11 through 14, and continue to fill in the blanks. We're going to talk about a few of the complicated areas and challenges that sexual abuse survivors face. And the first one, if you look in your outline, is the dynamics of longings, and voice. Longings and voice. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. Longings are those things that all people need in order to develop physically, sexually, relationally, and spiritually healthy people. Some of the things that children need in order to grow up functional is food, water, shelter. They need to be loved and cherished. They need to have significance. They need to be held and touched and given verbal affection. Without finding those needs attached to sexual experiences. They need protection and healthy boundaries. They need guidance and teaching. They need respect and privacy for their bodies. They need encouragement to develop gifts and talents. They need spiritual direction. And they need to be clean and practice personal hygiene. Those are longings and those are needs that all children experience. When a child discovers that it doesn't matter what they need, it doesn't matter what they want, it doesn't matter what their longings are, that someone has taken those needs, taken those longings, and told them essentially it doesn't matter, then they learn to hate what they hunger for the most. They learn to hate the fact that they need to be held. They learn to hate the fact that they need anything. And because those longings are crushed, what happens inside is that something dies. And that death is an emotional self-image death that lets them know it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you want. It doesn't matter what you need. And because of that, their voice is silenced. And let's talk about that B in your outline. Voice is defined as the ability to express longings and be heard by those who can meet those needs. And the most devastating thing about abuse is this. Abuse silences a survivor's voice so that whatever they longed for or needed did not, fill in the blank, did not matter. Eventually, they learn to silence their voice. Now, I'm not talking about a literal speaking voice. I'm talking about that thing that's inside of all human beings that gives them the ability to express their needs and their wants. And abuse silences a person's voice and despair sets in. D, abuse teaches survivors to despise what they long for. They learn to hate what they need and to deny that these needs exist. They spend huge amounts of energy to pretend that they do not have longings. To have longings when held in the harsh realities that their longings were crushed is too painful for most survivors to deal with. And because of this, unbearable internal pressure develops over a period of time because there's no balance between unmet longings and the demand to have those longings met. And so what takes place internally is they know they have these longings, but it didn't do any good to have those longings. Their voice was silenced, and yet at the same time, here they are, and they have these huge crushing pressures inside of them, this despair that somebody needs to care about them, somebody needs to meet their needs, and it's all just one vicious circle. They go into a big, gigantic, chaotic mess of having longings, but denying those longings and spending enormous amounts of energy and time to try to either pretend they don't exist or to push them so far away that they don't matter or to demand those needs be met in very inappropriate ways. F, abuse survivors often spend the rest of their lives in a frantic attempt to recover their voice, to demand that someone meets their needs, and denying that these needs exist at the same time. Their lives are screaming for someone to care for them they need desperately to matter to somebody. And of course, H, this sends them on an impossible journey, which usually results in the following: isolation and rage, depression, sexual dysfunction, and or addiction. And then addictions, sometimes substance addictions such as drugs or alcohol, sometimes behavioral addictions, pornography, gambling, the internet, sometimes relational addictions, codependency, and promiscuity and abuse. Oftentimes we'll see compulsive behavior in abuse survivors in this quest to recover their voice, and compulsive behavior is simply somebody doing the same things over and over and over again without any control. Frequently we will see eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, binging, hoarding food. This at this time is still a predominantly a woman's issue, but we will begin to see more and more men in our ministries and in our lives that are struggling with eating disorders as well, which we may see at the other end of the spectrum, not necessarily anorexia, but certainly an inability to control their eating. Physical problems are frequently seen among abuse survivors, chronic health problems, frequent accidents, and a lot of stress, fill in the blank, stress-related illnesses. Many, many people who are survivors of abuse experience tremendous physical problems on a chronic basis. Frequently, because of this journey to recover their voice, you will see low self-esteem because abuse has defined their worth. They've been taught to think about themselves through the eyes of abuse, through the mouth of abuse, through the experiences of abuse. And because of that, they view themselves often as disposable, as unimportant, as insignificant. And, of course, low self-esteem really is about being totally self-absorbed. Because if you think poorly about yourself, then the only person you're ever thinking about is yourself. And that's a very hard thing for abuse survivors to begin to understand, is that what has happened to their world in an attempt to recover their voice is that all they're thinking about constantly is who they are and what they don't have or what they are not. And so the whole universe now revolves around what they are not and what they don't have and what they want that they're not getting. And low self-esteem sets in. Oftentimes we'll see self-destruction among abuse survivors. Suicide attempts are very, very common. Self-mutilation, cutting or burning themselves, trying to carve into their flesh or burn into their flesh some sort of testimony of what it is they hunger for, what their longings are. Oftentimes you will see as part of this self-destructive behavior, abuse survivors putting themselves again and again and again in dangerous and outrageous situations where a saner person would know that they were in tremendous danger. Oftentimes we see intensity addiction, where everything has to be intense, and a crisis it will be created if one's not naturally occurring. These are people that live in extreme manners, and oftentimes you will see abuse survivors that you are working with or your friends or even yourself, where it's like everything is a big deal and everything's intense, and if it's not intense, it won't be long before it becomes intense quickly. And it's just another form of trying somehow to make sense of what they don't have, and their constant hunger for their longings to be met, to recover their voice. Oftentimes we will see destructive, abusive or unhealthy relationships that characterize most of their social circles. Most people who are survivors of abuse who have not gotten help and are continuing on this path to recover their voice have this amazing knack of surrounding themselves with destructive relationships, or relationships where they're being abused or they're doing the abusing, or extremely unhealthy dynamics are taking place. Another area we're going to talk about is ambivalence. And this is another thing that is huge and crashes internally inside a sexual abuse survivor all the time. In your notes, it says that ambivalence is defined as two opposite emotions that are being felt at the same time over the same person or experiences, and this creates tremendous internal chaos. Survivors often love and hate their abusers at the same time. And oftentimes, survivors have often experienced pleasure in the context of perversion, and it leaves them both drawn to and repulsed by sexual things at the same time. And D, survivors have often comforted their abuser, which leaves them confused about responsibility for the actual abuse and the relationship. Ambivalence is something you need to have a really clear understanding of as you work with abuse survivors, because inside are these huge emotions, these huge feelings, these huge experiences that are at both ends of the emotional and experiential spectrum, and they're working in complete polar opposites of each other, and yet they coexist in an abuse survivor at the same time, and they crash inside of them all at once. How can they possibly love someone who has violated them in the way that they've been violated? How could they possibly have experienced an orgasm in the context of such perversion? How could they possibly have comforted somebody who has taken so much from them? And so these love-hate dynamics are going on inside all the time, and it sends them emotionally spiraling out of control on a regular basis. You need to understand that as a helper, so that you can help them begin to separate it all. You know, yes, you love this person, but that does not change what they did to you. And so it's what they did to you that you hate. And yes, you can still love that person. And this is something they need help sort of walking through, because it's extremely chaotic. Okay, we're going to stop and talk next about helping in ways that do not hurt.